Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iRadioBlog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about creating and building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. My name is Max Brown, along with my colleague Roy Saunderson, and we're both from the Recognition Management Institute. Roy, I am so excited about the show today. How about yourself?
It has been a real honor to be able to read all about our guest today, and I'm looking forward to just talking with him further and have this personal connection.
Well, it is special indeed. And for all of our listeners out there, we are talking today with Louis Zamperini, the man who was a POW in World War II, an Olympic athlete before that. In fact, I'm going to read a bio here so that people get to know who you are, Louis. And then, of course, later in the show, we're going to have Laura Hillenbrand, the author of Seabiscuit, and then later she wrote Unbroken, about and chronicling Louis's life. Louis Zamperini, as he likes to be called, Louis, is truly an inspiring man who has lived through a series of catastrophes almost too unbearable to believe. His life story is told in Laura Hillenbrand's book, Unbroken, and as I mentioned, she'll be on the show here shortly with us as well. And growing up, Louis was a juvenile delinquent in the 20s. He turned to become an Olympic runner in the 30s and qualified to run on the 1936 Olympic team and was America's top finisher at the Games in Berlin, where Hitler was in power. World War II broke out, and of course, Louis joined the U.S. Air Corps. He was on a routine search mission over the Pacific when his plane crashed into the ocean. And Louis and another crew member survived in a life raft drifting 2,000 miles for 47 days into Japanese-controlled waters, which, of course, turned to his rescuers were also his torturers, as the Japanese put Louis into a series of prison camps. He outlasted his captors, and he returned to California. And in 1998, Louis carried the Olympic flame during the Winter Games in Nagano, Japan, just outside the town where he had been held captive. And today, at 94 years of age, Louis is still spry and full of life. His lectures and speeches to audiences around the globe continue to inspire and to motivate people. You're truly a story of courage, selflessness, and humanity. And Louis, thank you for being on our show.
Hey, well, it's my privilege.
Well, we are grateful. When you reflect on your life now, what would you say makes you smile?
Well, I the Bible has the answer to longevity. It says, have a cheerful countenance at all times. So nothing gets me down. No, my family, my daughter is 65, and she said, Dad, I've never seen you get mad. And I got two wonderful kids, and I dealt with them properly, and the fact that I've never been mad, I think that is a great contribution to raising a family.
Wow, well, that's not an easy thing to do either. I mean, with all the stresses and certainly with the life experiences you went through, how do you do that?
Well, as a kid, I was always in trouble. Now, let's face it, I was a rotten kid, and but I was also defiant. And I've been paddled in school by a wooden paddle, a razor belt, and paddled by my dad, but no one's ever seen me cry. I would never cry. I never cried when I was punished because I was defiant. And that's what got me through prison camp when Sergeant Watanabe was taking care of me every day, punching me in the face and hit me with a belt buckle that weighed about a pound. And I just stood there in a defiant attitude with my fist clenched, and that made him even madder. But I didn't care. And I got beaten up quite a bit for over 2 years. But my defiant attitude, I think, is what brought me through.
Well, you know, it's interesting because many people would believe that that was that defining moment in life, being tortured like the way you were, would break a person. How did you become better because of all of this, if that's the word?
And when they took me into Radio Tokyo to make a broadcast to my family, that was the script that I wrote. Then a week later, they said, oh, you have beautiful radio voice. We want you to make another broadcast. I said, hey, great. I went back, and this time they handed me a sheet of paper, and it was propaganda, and you read that. And I looked it over. I said, no, this is propaganda. I can't read it. And they said, you must read it. I said, I can't. So they went into another room to have a discussion. In the meantime, they had several copies on the desk, and so I was able to swipe one. And that's in the book, by the way. And they came back and said, because you refuse, you will go to punishment camp. So the whole thing, the whole story, Unbroken, is based on that, the fact that they tried to force me to do a propaganda broadcast. And there's no way I could do it. You'd have to live with it the rest of your life, and that I couldn't take.
Hmm. If we could take a step back before that, just you talked about this delinquency as a child and how the recognition and the appreciation you got started you on a different way, and it actually encouraged you as a runner. Do you think the recognition helps us to make us better?
Oh, absolutely. The recognition, I think I've gone through thousands of kids at my youth camp, and I always look for a kid that don't get attention. And kids that don't get attention, they'll do anything to get attention, and that was my problem. And I just went out and stole this, stole that, had the BB gun fight with the other gangs. But when I started running, I wasn't ready for running, but they put me on the track, and I passed a guy, and the students from my school were hollering, come on, Louie. Well, boy, that was recognition. I didn't know anybody knew my name. And, boy, that tasted good. And so then I made a decision that night, told my brother, okay, I'm going all out. So I quit doing what I was doing, drinking, smoking, or whatever, and I became a runner. And now this is during the time of what Tom Brokaw called the greatest generation. But I don't like that term. The term I like is a hardy generation, because every time you overcome an adversity, you become more and more hardy. And so there are plenty of adversities in prison camp, and you have to overcome them or you're dead.
Well, absolutely. How did you sustain yourself during those times then? Did recognition, was any of that part of it? I know that it was chronicled in the book that you talk about dignity being so important during that time, and that just trying to save some type of dignity while in the camp was part of living and actually the way to live.
Well, they tried to strip you of your dignity. That was my big problem more than anybody, I think, in camp. But I couldn't stand to be treated like a non-entity. And also, I think that my athletic training, you're trained to do your best and to win. And so that's built into you from being on the Olympic team. And so in prison, it was the same way. I never thought about dying on the raft. I never thought about dying on 43 days in a dungeon on Kwajalein. I never thought about dying in prison. Why? Because I was too busy trying to keep alive. So anyway, overcoming... Every time you overcome an adversity, you become more and more hardy. So that is a picture of us before the war. During the Depression, we were a hardy generation. We not only had to overcome adversities continually, but we helped one another. We had picnics and things they don't do today, the whole neighborhood. And when somebody was sick, then the other neighbor would take care of them. If somebody was losing their house, everybody would pitch in to pay the mortgage on it, or the payments, until the guy got another job. But things have changed. And back in those days, by the way, they did have drugs. But nobody would touch drugs. And even when you were running, they had people trying to sell drugs to the runners. But I never heard of a runner in my day taking a drug. But today it's pathetic because the drugs have saturated America, mainly coming up from the border.
Louis, obviously your experience in the prisons of war, and especially with the viciousness of Watanabe's experience, how did you make the transition from seeking that revenge to completely wanting to forgive?
You're talking about post-traumatic stress?
Well, yes, and just how did you make that transition from seeking revenge?
You can imagine by being pommeled on the head almost every day, I'll stand there with my fist clenched, and in prison camp I'm having nightmares because I wanted to kill the bird. I mean, here I am every night strangling him, and I'd wake up in the morning, and it was a dream, and I came home, and the nightmares were every single night. That's how this thing was branded into my soul. Mm-hmm. And then when I got married, I looked perfectly normal, but I had nightmares at night, which shook my wife up, and then one night I woke up with my hands around her throat, and that really scared me. And,
right.
So then I started to drink a lot, came in drunk every night, and so she rightfully filed for a divorce. And then somebody talked her into going down to hear Billy Graham. He was unknown in those days, but as the guy was talking to us and giving scripture, I got mad, walked out of the room, but she went with he and his girlfriend down to the tent and made a confession of her faith in Christ as she came home and trying to get me to go down. I refused. She said, because of my conversion, now I'm not going to get a divorce. Well, boy, that made me happy. I loved my wife, beautiful girl, brilliant, but I still didn't want to go down. But finally she convinced me, and when I heard Billy Graham preaching, I got mad, grabbed her, pulled her home and said, don't ever get me back to a place like this again. That night, she was all over me. The next day, she knew this was the salvation of our marriage. The next day, she finally convinced me to go back. And I said, okay, on one condition. When that fellow says every head bowed and every eye closed, we're out of there. Well, she thought that's better than nothing, so she said, okay. And so I started to leave the meeting, and Billy was talking about when people come to the end of their rope and there's nowhere else to turn, they turn to God. And I thought of that. That's exactly what happened to me and so many other people. And before I got to the aisle, I made my decision to go back to the prayer room, and there I made a confession of my faith in Christ, and I couldn't believe what happened. While I was still on my knees, I knew there was a change in my life. And I knew that I was through getting drunk. I was through hitting my guard, and I knew that I forgave every guard, including, unbelievably, the bird, Mr. Shiro Watanabe. Mm-hmm. And that night I did not have a nightmare. I'd had nightmares for over 2.5 years. And I didn't have one that night, and I haven't had one since. And even though I'm reading Laura Hildebrand's book, I thought, surely this will bring back my nightmares, because her book is so graphic, and she puts you back in prison.
No kidding.
I couldn't read more than a chapter a day, because I'd sit here and read, I'm back in prison, I have to look out the window over L.A. and Hollywood to be sure I'm alive. And it was just, I got a lot of letters from people all over the nation. Now I know what it's like to be in prison camp, because I was in there with you when I read the book.
Yes.
The woman's a genius writer, and she tabulates everything with confirmation. So anything I tell her, she still gets on the computer to see if it's true. And so her book is really an historical book.
Mm-hmm.
Just what it is. And then I get a lot of letters from veterans from World War II that say, her book finally tells the truth about things in the Pacific. She tells the truth to find out the truth about the bombers crashing in practice and things like that. She found out about the truth of the horrible storm I was in, that meteorologists say, no, they don't have storms that big near the equator. Wow. And she checked all the weather reports for that year and that day, and she said, you know what you were in? I said, no. She said, you were in a typhoon, an unusual typhoon. And then I got a letter just last week from an officer that was on Okinawa, and he said, we traced that typhoon from where you were to Okinawa, and it knocked us over. So anyway, she's a genius at getting to the truth. It has to be accurate, and that's why her book is really a history book.
You're right, and I found as I read it, Louis, that I thought to myself, if history books were really been written like this, maybe history wouldn't have been repeated so much.
Right. And she's not only a great, great, unusual writer, but she's a sweetheart. And I never met a woman like her. I never met her in person, but I love her. She's the greatest.
Absolutely. We're going to have to take a quick break right now, but please stay tuned for more on Louis Zamperini's amazing life.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and Max Brown and our wonderful guest, Louis Zamperini. Now, obviously, people today can often feel like they're being treated unfairly. What would you say to those people? I mean, from what you've gone through, you know about unfair treatment. What do you say to people who feel they've been treated unfairly now?
It's a different world today. And thank God for the book. I get a lot of letters that people say when they read the book, they stop feeling sorry for themselves. I got a letter yesterday from a strong Christian guy, and he believed in forgiveness like I did, but he got fired from his job.
Mm-hmm.
He started hating the boss until he read the book. When he read the book, then he had forgiveness in his heart. So I think the book is a good reminder that we should love one another and forgive one another.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious. You were a real challenge as a kid there, Louis. What advice would you give to parents raising a child who gets into trouble now?
Well, the main thing is interest. You see, when I was a kid, I had only one interest, and that was gang-related. I should have played tennis, and I should have done this and that and the other sports. When you have no interest, then you create your own interest, and that's dangerous. And also, kids want attention. Okay, this kid, this guy that shot Gifford, the woman, and those other people, I told my friends, I said, okay, when he goes to prison, they take a picture of him, and he's going to have the biggest smile on his face you ever saw. And sure enough, that happened. Why? Because he got world attention. And so people, when they want attention, they'll do anything to get it. And he went the whole hog. But then again, my prediction was right. You ever see a smile that big? He was glad he'd be caught because he knew now I'm world famous.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a very good advice. So we got to give some better interest to the kids today.
When the kids start growing up, you better create interest for them. Anything, stamp collecting, coin collecting, especially sports. And get out with your kids and play with them. Teach them tennis, play with them. Take them on hikes. Teach them a little bit about flowers and geology. And I've taught a lot of kids. And I got two kids that I had when they were 12 years old. I got them interested in rocks, and one is the state geologist in California. Yeah, that's very important. It give them attention and interest. Otherwise, they'll seek the attention, and it may be the wrong way.
Good advice,
yeah,
Louie.
Absolutely. It's obvious, though, that it can go both ways, can't it? Recognition can go both ways. Either they're trying to get it in the wrong way or in a proper way. So what kind of advice could we give to leaders today, then, who are looking to motivate and engage people on a better way to get better productivity and to build their company?
Well, I had at my Victory Boys Camp, I had an office at the Hollywood Presbyterian Church, and that's what I emphasize on young people, junior high and high school. And we created interest in them. We'd challenge them to tennis and challenge them to a hike over the Hollywood Hills. And we always gave them a challenge, and we always created interest. And because of the leaders, they would listen. And that's what it's all about. We had, in 2 years, we had about 120 kids go into the ministry that otherwise wouldn't have. And now they have churches all over the West here, and sometimes they call me to come up and speak. And I see these kids, and I have to tell the truth about them to their congregation, how honorary they were growing up at the church. But then again, when they committed their life to God and went to seminary and ended up with the church, that's a great interest.
Yeah. When you think about the people who are talking about you and that you were going to be the person to break the 4-minute mile, how did that make you feel? And then as a result of all the things you had to do and obviously going to war, it changed everything. I mean, your life changed in an instant.
I was off of the team for 2 weeks, and so I trained myself, and I figured out how to run the 4-minute mile. So I started running the stairways in the Coliseum to build up the muscles I used for lifting my knees. And then on the track, I would do distance work to build up endurance, and then I would run a half. The first half mile of a mile is usually 159, 158. So I'd run a 158 half mile, and then I'd rest for 1 minute, and then run another quick one on top of it. And then maybe 2 days later, I'd run a half mile in 158, then I'd run a three quarters in less than 3 minutes. And so when I went back to Minneapolis, I was really ready for a 4-minute mile, and word got around. I should have kept my mouth shut. Word got around, and Coach Nicholson from Notre Dame, who's an Eastern coach, he said, I just came from an Eastern coach's meeting, and they're going to tell their boys to do everything to tie you up in the race. I said, don't worry, I can take care of myself. That's a usual attitude of a young guy. And sure enough, the next day at the half-mile mark, I think it was 158, then I was going to open up for the last half, and they boxed me in. And I think you saw the picture in the book. I had three big gashes 2 inches long in my shins. I had a spike run through my toe and a cracked rib. So I tried to break out. The guy comes up. He lifted the elbow up and comes back and cracks me in the ribs. And when I won the race, I really slowed down the last 5 yards. And my coach said, how fast do you think you ran? I said, we didn't break 4:20. He said, you just broke the national collegiate record. That's the good a shape I was in, ready for it. And Glenn Cunningham inspired me. He said, "Louie, I think you're going to be the first man to run the 4-minute mile." So it was Glenn Cunningham, my hero, that really got me aiming for that.
So great leaders set expectations and believe in us, don't they?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got a real hero, you know, like Glenn Cunningham. You know, I've seen him in the shower, and, boy, he's burnt not only his legs up the middle of his back. How in the world did he ever run? You know, and he couldn't even walk when he was a kid with those burns. And then he started walking, and he started running, and became the king of the milers.
Yes. It's an incredible story. For all of our listeners, we encourage everyone to read the book Unbroken by Laura Hillenbrand, chronicling Louis Zamperini's life, as we're talking with Louis today. 94 years young, I should say. Louis, as you know, we have Laura Hillenbrand on the show today as well. If you were to ask her a question, what would you ask her today?
Well, to ask her a question, I said, "You made me famous overnight. I love you."
And what is it about Laura that makes her so special? You talked about her a moment ago and saying that, but again, what would you ask her if you could? And then when we come back from break, we'll let her respond.
Well, she's the sweetest woman I ever talked to. And she can interview you for 5 hours, and boy, you don't want to hang up. She's got such a sweet attitude and a sweet voice, and so she can get information out of anybody with that attitude. And what do you say if I saw her face to face? I haven't met her. I think I've had about 95 interviews with her. But if I saw her face to face, I would have to give her a big hug and thank her for the book. And I think she realizes by now how many people already have been helped by the book. And I think I gave you a few samples. And so she's doing more than just writing a book. She's helping thousands and thousands of people, not only young, but even older. And the letters I get confirm that.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. And Roy and I have talked about this after reading the book ourselves, and it deeply impacted our lives. We are so grateful that you would both be willing to join us on the show. Louis, if people want to reach out to you, I'm going to give them your email there. It's at louiszamperini.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's you can call that to get me or to get an autographed book. It's Louis, not Louis. louiszamperini.com. That'll do it.
Perfect. L-O-U-I-E.
And by the way, when you do that, you'll get a hold of the famous Olympic swimmer, John Neighbor, because he's volunteered to be my manager and agent. And he was on the Montreal Olympics, 5 gold medals, so can't beat that.
Well, I agree with you. It's a wonderful connection. In fact, I have to give some credit to the owners of our show, actually, were Olympic athletes and knew of John Neighbor and that connection. And when they read your book, they said, "You've got to see if Louis could join us on the show." So we are delighted to have you here. Louis, if you could stay on the line, we have to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to introduce Laura to the show, and we would love to have you stay with us if you have a few moments.
Okay.
That would be delightful. So we will take a quick break, but when we return, we'll be speaking with best-selling author of Seabiscuit and the new book, Unbroken. Yeah, absolutely. We'll be right there. It's going to be great. This is Max and Roy Saunderson, and we're reminding you to keep it real. Please stay tuned on Real Recognition Radio as we talk with Laura and Louis at the same time on the same show. We will be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio, myself, Roy Saunderson, and Max Brown, and we're now welcoming our guest, Laura Hillenbrand. Laura is the author of Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption based on Louis Zamperini's life. Laura's work has appeared in The New Yorker, New York Times, Washington Post, The Los Angeles Times, American Heritage, USA Today, Reader's Digest, and many other publications. Her New Yorker article, A Sudden Illness, won the 2003 National Magazine Award. Her first book, which I'm sure many of you have read, Seabiscuit, An American Legend, ranked number one on the New York Times bestseller list for a total of 42 weeks and won the BookSense Nonfiction Book of the Year Award as well as the William Hill Sports Book of the Year Award in Great Britain. The book was runner-up for the Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers Award and was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award, the Los Angeles New York Times Book Prize, and the Borders Original Voices Prize. Ms. Hillenbrand is also a two-time winner of the Eclipse Award, the highest journalistic honor in thoroughbred racing. And now we're going deeper into Unbroken. We're honored to have you on our show today, Laura. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, this is just a treat, and I've said to Max and also now to Louis that I think if my history books had ever been written the way yours has been written in this life of Louis, maybe history wouldn't have been repeated as often as it has been.
Well, that's wonderfully flattering. Hello, Louis. It's good,
hey,
to, good
Laura,
to hear you.
How's my gal?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, well, good thing I'm not there in person, or I'd give you a big, hard hug.
I know. I'd be giving you one, too. Louis and I have done lots of radio separately, but we've never gone out at the same time.
No way. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Is there another question you'd like to ask Louis while you're here?
I think in 7 years, I pretty much asked him every question one could possibly ask a person, and I have to say, I mean, Louis was the most wonderful source. He was so patient with me, because I am a stickler for detail, and I would ask him every little detailed question, trying to get into the grain of the story, and he always put up with it, and he was very, very honest and very forthcoming, and boy, he was just a dream to interview for all those years.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, you've had a chance to perhaps listen in a little bit to Louis's conversation. What were some thoughts that went through your mind as you heard some of his comments?
You know, every time I talk to Louis, or I see him on TV, or I hear him on the radio, I have the same thought I had the very first time I spoke to him. I was actually a little bit scared when I first called him, because it was such an awkward thing to call somebody up and ask them about the kinds of hardships he had been through, you know, being a prisoner of war, having been on a raft, having been in combat, these really difficult experiences, and I didn't want to tread on painful places with him. And what really struck me about Louis when I first talked to him was how buoyant he is, how cheerful he is. The things he has been through are not things he still wears on himself emotionally. He is truly a man at peace, and I hear it today on the radio. I mean, he's a happy person, and it was one of the things that made me want to write this book. Is, you know, I had to know, how could someone go through this much and be this happy?
Mm-hmm. Now you've described that quality now after you've met him or talked with him and interviewed him. How did you discover the story? What then? How did you choose to write about him? I mean, like, What was the discovery process for finding Louis?
It was a very unexpected thing. A horse led me to Louis.
No way.
I was writing about Seabiscuit, the great 1930s racehorse. Well, Louis and Seabiscuit were at the peak of their fame at the same time as athletes.
Okay.
And they were both in Southern California. They were both written about all the time in the L.A. Times and the San Francisco Chronicle and all sorts of California publications. And while researching Seabiscuit, I kept coming across stories about this teenage running phenom.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories were really interesting to me. I wrote down his name. And when I was done working on Seabiscuit, I wrote Louis a letter, and he wrote a very nice letter back. And so I gave him that first phone call, and he told me his life story, and I had never heard anything so amazing in my life, and I knew I wanted to write a book about him.
Oh, what a serendipitous find in that sense.
Yes, I really couldn't believe how easily I had stumbled upon the greatest story I will ever tell.
Oh, I think you've captured the essence there. I'm going to turn my time now over to my colleague, Max, just to kind of continue on these questions with you, but we certainly do appreciate the opportunity to have you both on the show today.
Well, thank you.
It certainly is a pleasure. Louis and Laura, for both of you, let me ask, how has this book changed your own lives, if it has at all?
Louis, you want to go first?
Well, it brought me. How can I say it? I was always impressed with Laura, but this 1995 interviews, and then the book coming out. I feel like we're one. She's family to me, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for her wonderful patience, and her research is unbelievable. And in fact, I told her, don't go back into my childhood too deep. But anyway, no matter what I told her, she checked on it. So the book is totally honest. And as I said, I get calls from veterans of World War II, and they said, well, finally, I read a book that's telling the truth about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gratifying.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Laura, how about you?
Wow, it has been such an amazing ride. I mean, in the very basic sense, Louis has been one of the most incredible and wonderful people I've ever met in my life, and it has been truly a privilege to work with him over these 7 years. I consider him my surrogate grandfather, and we're very, very good friends. And also just all of the other veterans and prisoners of war that I met over the course of doing this, this is just... It's a real honor to have someone trust you with their story. And a lot of these men had been through the most harrowing experiences, but they were willing to trust me to tell it right. And mm-hmm. I took that very seriously. And so it was, in a lot of ways, a very beautiful experience. And it was amazing for me. I was born decades after World War II, but to be able to become this intimate with that time, I feel almost as if I lived it. It was truly an incredible experience. I'm going to miss it when it's all over.
Mm. What is there anything that surprised you as you were doing the research and speaking with Louis or some of these other World War II prisoners of war?
I think the thing that stands out the most to me is I certainly understood that being an airman in World War II was a dangerous job, a very dangerous job, but I had no idea how dangerous it really was. Mm. The thing that I didn't know was that aside from combat, being an airman was incredibly risky. And there were actually 15,000 Army Air Corps personnel who died stateside in training without ever seeing a combat theater. And then in combat, or in the war theaters, another 36,000 airmen died in non-combat accidents. So, you know, when you're talking to Louis, you're talking to a guy who really beat the odds in terms of surviving this war. In combat, men had a 50-50 chance of completing their tour of duty. So these were really fearsome statistics to me, and it was the thing that stayed with me more than anything else, I think.
Louis, how did you keep getting in those airplanes, knowing that they were so dangerous?
Well, that's part of combat. You see your buddies go out and not come back, and so when you go out, you leave a note on your foot locker. If I'm not back in a week, open it up and share whatever I have. There might be a 6 bottles of beer or something like that. No, we knew from our daily missions, people going out and not firing a gun, but it's just on a search mission to have the plane go down from mechanical failure, or the fact that the B-24 had a couple of gas leaks. So if you lit a cigarette, you didn't know if the plane was going to blow up or not.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to thank Laura for building up my endurance, because the mail comes in here so thick I have to have John Neighbor here to help me read it. And I'm in good shape and still very active.
Well, we hope people will engage you even more, and that they'll be able to hear your voice and continue to spread that message.
We're going to have to take a quick break right now, but please stay tuned for more on Louis Zamperini's amazing life.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and Max Brown and our wonderful guest, Louis Zamperini.
Louis, let's start with you and then Laura. What is the essence of the message you hope people will learn?
Well, I think the main thing, the book is all about adversities. And I think that every time you overcome an adversity, you become more and more hardy. So when I sign books, I always say, be hardy, because our generation was the hardy generation. We had a lot of obstacles to overcome, and we helped one another. And I think that's why Bocaw wrote the book calling us the greatest generation. Things have changed quite a bit since then. But my thought is that don't worry about problems or adversity, because think of it this way. If I can overcome this, I'll be a more hardy person.
Yes, to be honest with you, I don't know if I would have survived the first few days on that life raft, just hearing some of the experiences you went through there, and then being shot at later on when you think you're being rescued. I mean, then it goes on and on. I mean, then you get to the islands, and then to be tortured the way you were, it just never stopped.
Well, you would if you're on the raft, your first thought is, I want to live. And then another thing, on the raft, people say, did you ever think about dying? Never. Never thought about dying, because we were too busy trying to live.
What a wonderful message. Laura, anything you would add to that?
I would agree with everything that Louis said, and of course he's the expert on that. I think the thing, one of the main reasons I wrote this book is that this is a story, this isn't just a slog through hardship. It's not that at all. I wouldn't have written it if it was. This is a story about a man who was always able to find a way to overcome even the most extreme hardship. And I think none of us is ever going to end up on a life raft in the Pacific for 47 days. None of us is going to be enslaved. We're not going to be shot down. We're not going to be in combat. But all of us are going to experience things in life where we don't know if we can go on, where we don't know if we're going to be able to overcome this next thing. And the great lesson of Louis's life is how broad possibility is, that there are ways out of things if you put your mind to it, if you apply your optimism, if you have some ingenuity like Louis has. So I think in that way it's a tremendously inspiring story for people.
And how has it changed your life as a result of doing this, writing this book, Laura?
Oh, wow. For me, at its core, this project was about exploring what it is about certain men like Louis who can overcome. What are the attributes they have that enable them to get through things that we think aren't survivable? And so the book, working on this and getting to know Louis, getting to know all these other prisoners of war and airmen, has given me a much greater understanding of human resilience and of the importance of dignity, of the importance of optimism. I feel inspired by that, and I feel like I understand human nature a lot better. I mean, people find out who they really are when they're thrown into extremity, as Louis was. And so you really get to know what people are like reading this story. And for me, it was something I can draw lessons from every day.
Well, I certainly am every day, and having you both on the show today is just so wonderful for us. Is there any last piece of advice either of you would give us? And then would either of you be able to comment on the fact that we've heard Louis sent you one of his Purple Hearts?
Yes, he did. I told him I couldn't accept it. This was just too much, but he insisted. So wow, that just blew me away that he sent
Laura. Yeah, I suffered for over 2 years. You've been suffering a lot longer than that. It deserves a Purple Heart.
Oh, Louis, bless you. You're absolutely wonderful. I will treasure that until the day I die. Thank you so much.
Wow. I feel so much. I just have to say it. I appreciate the love and the idea that we can talk about it so freely, that we can talk about forgiveness, that we can talk about acceptance and resilience, optimism and hope. Words that aren't often acceptable in a culture of greed and speed. Would you agree?
I certainly would. Yeah, it's these are things that I think people are a little bit uncomfortable with. They feel it's a little bit corny, but these are the things that enable you to have a happy life. I mean, this is the thing Louis has figured out that many people never figure out is how to find joy even in a life that's had a great deal of suffering in it. I mean, I've never met anyone who's more of a virtuoso of optimism and joy than Louis. It's funny, when I was going through the experience of writing this book, I was having some terrible health problems, and you know, my mood was often very down, but he just never failed to fill me with joy when I spoke to him. I just loved doing it. And this is great gift. He is a radiantly happy man.
Oh, I love it. I've been inspired as well, Louis. And for every reason that some, you know, people get jaded and destroy their entire lives off much smaller things than you've been through. And yet you didn't allow that to change your life one bit. You've actually made your life so much better as a result of rising above these things. Who do you attribute to your success? Who are the people in your life that helped you get through all this, Louis?
My brother. He caught me when I was a rotten kid, and my dad had to spank me about, or belt me, or paddle me with a wooden paddle about every other day, and I was very defiant. Now, no one ever saw me cry. I got paddled by the principal, I got paddled by my dad, and I never shed a tear, and that was a really unusual thing they couldn't figure out. I was defiant, and that defiance carried me through prison camp and almost got me killed. But the defiance came in handy when they wanted me to read the propaganda on the radio, and I was defiant about that, absolutely 100% defiant. And so they helped me in a way through that ordeal, and then I was sent to another prison camp where it was slave labor camp. But that was good in a way because I met some new buddies, new prisoners of war that I related to, and we helped one another emotionally and mentally as we talked. And that's what prison camp's all about. You have to support one another.
Mm-hmm. And you did that in the simplest ways. I mean, how would you support each other in such strenuous circumstance?
Well, you know, we talk to each other, what school we went to, the future, and we talk about the war, because we knew that we were aggressive in the Atlantic War, and that encouraged us all to know that we were winning. And when the first plane flew over Tokyo, B-29, man, we were all just elated, and that gave us strength to finish out the rest of the war. But I made some very, very close friends that I miss, really. They're all dead, but I miss these guys because they all had a different personality. We became very close together, and now they're all gone except one, and that's my buddy Frank Tinker in Arizona. And he graduated from Juilliard School of Music. So they let him have an old guitar in prison camp, and he used to play us songs every night, and that helped a lot. Mm-hmm. And now living on the border down there, I'm not sure. I think he's probably turned his guitar in for an XK-47.
Well, it's so much sacrifice, such a compelling and amazing story. Laura, thank you for bringing this story to life for us with the book Unbroken.
Thank you so much, but really, all the praise should go to Louis. He lived it. I just wrote it down.
Well, to both of you, we want to say thank you. If we could conclude this show today with one thing about what makes you smile as you look towards the future and gives you hope for the future and this younger generation, what would it be? Louis, what about you? And then Laura, what about you?
Well, the secret is to have a cheerful countenance at all times. I've broken skiing and falling down a cement stairway. I've broken both hips, and I just looked up and I said, "Lord, I know all things work together for good. This better be good." and I went to the hospital. I healed a week early because of my attitude, and the doctor said, "With your attitude, you're getting a flood of white corpuscles in your immune system. That's why you heal so fast." And nothing bothers me, no matter how bad it is, because you accept it. You accept it. My son came to visit me in the hospital, and this one nurse said, "Oh, I just love your dad. He makes me feel so good." And then this other nurse walked in, a tall blonde. She saw my Trojan hat, and she said, "Oh, I'm a Trojan." We talked for a while. She said, "Well, Louis, I came in to give you a shot." She gave me a shot, and she said, "Well, Louis, I got to leave you now." And I said, "You're the first woman who ever said that to me." So that was the way it was for a week, 2 weeks in the hospital. Humor, humor, humor.
Wonderful. I love it. I love it. Laura, we're going to close this with you, and I want to be able to make sure people know how to get a hold of you at any website you would want to share with us as well. But what gives you hope for the future?
I think if you take anything away from Louis's life, it should be that we all have more resilience in us than we realize. We just need to know how to tap into it, that possibility is a broad and lavish thing, and you can survive more than you think. And just look at Louis, and you feel like you can get through anything in life.
Boy, I totally, totally agree. You have blessed our lives, both of you, today, and I will be sharing this story with as many people as I can think of in my life. Roy, I'm sure you feel the same.
Very much. It has moved me, and Laura, certainly with your the research and Louis's life, you've certainly made an impression of what the reality is of war, but also, as you talk about, the resilience that we need to have in our lives. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you.
You know, on a personal note for me, I have two brothers that are serving in Iraq right now, and, you know, Louis, you mentioned as well, I think, Laura, you mentioned in the book as well, that even though you come home and you look normal, it's not always what's going on the outside that's apparent. You know, I have, my brothers have been impacted deeply, one of them for two tours now, and war's tough stuff. And I think what you've brought to us with this story gives people and families hope, and we can help those around us, not just from war, but from all the adversities we live with. So thank you to both of you. Laura, if people want to get a hold of you or find out more information on something you're supporting, where would they go?
I have a book website. It is www.unbroken-book.com.
Okay, so unbroken-book.com.
Yes.
And louiszamperini.com for more information around Louis Zamperini. For Roy and I, we thank you for being on the show. We hope it's been a wonderful show. Thank you so much
for being a part of this. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Louie.
Thanks for listening to Real Recognition Radio. Roy and I welcome and encourage your comments and suggestions. Please email us at feedback@realrecognition.com to continue to give us any kind of feedback or ideas that you might have regarding the show. We look forward to hearing from you. For more information about the Recognition Management Institute, you can see us at www.realrecognition.com. For Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, that's all today. We're reminding you to keep it real. Thanks for listening.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week. How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.